Time for Sports Lit 101 this afternoon. Now, Bruce here with us and talking about a book that we chatted about a little bit over the last couple of weeks called Pigskin Nation. Tell us more, Bruce.
Well, this book opened my eyes because it took a lot of facts that I sort of knew and put them together, and it really lets us know how we got to where we are with the National Football League and politics at the moment.
Mm,
and a lot of us probably don't. I just want to read from this very first page because this is where the book grabbed me. Only four of the more than 150 articles in the New York Times' massive collection of sports pieces from its first century, published in 1951, concerned the NFL. And Allison Danzig's 1956 History of American Football described only the college variety. How soon we forget how unimportant, until Burt Bell really became the commissioner of the National Football League and started changing things around, football was. It was a hooligan sport. Hardy Brown knocked out, I want to get this right, knocked out 21 opponents in 12 games in 1951. He didn't get suspended. He didn't get fined. He just knocked them out. And he bragged about it late in life. I remember seeing a story about him, how he could throw his shoulder into someone's head and knock him out. It was the it was just prize fighting in a different way. In fact, the press found it so brutal that that in a couple of cases after Lamb basting various teams for their, quote, dirty play, they lost libel suits against a couple of the Philadelphia Eagles and the like. But the point of the book is football started out in this country is completely identified with colleges. And as we've talked about with so many books earlier, pro football was looked upon as a disaster. It was going to be full of gambling and it was full of cheating, and it wouldn't we wouldn't have the kinds of morals we'd want in our football players. Then along comes the NFL and it starts to get popular. And then we elect Richard Milhouse Nixon. And Richard Nixon was told by his advisors that one of the ways he could develop his Southern strategy was becoming identified with things that Southerners like. And knowing that the Southeastern Conference football is a religion in the Southeastern part of the United States, he began to use more and more football analogies and football metaphors in his speeches, and became a person who was often seen at football games. Then, as we may remember, we had a number of undefeated teams one year, including Texas and Arkansas and Penn State, and Texas played Arkansas in a bowl game, I believe it was the Cotton Bowl. And when Texas won, Richard Nixon presented Darryl Royal, the head coach, with a plaque naming them national champions. Though in those days, there were the coaches' poll and the UPI poll, and they were different. And one had Arkansas and one had Texas. But it became identifying the presidency with football. And more, all the way up through Watergate, Nixon and his people started, and this is all in the book, I mean, spelled out, started using all these football analogies.
Well, Nixon, too, the two football stories that come to mind with Nixon are he was friends with George Allen and sent the Washington, I think it was when he was with Washington, sent them a play.
Lost 13 yards.
Yeah.
An end around to Charlie Taylor, I think.
And then the bizarre story of the night there were protesters gathered outside the White House, and I think this was middle of the night. Nixon decides to leave the White House, and I think only took like one, not even a security person, but like an aide with him, and went to where all these college kids were protesting the war in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then the kids thought he was going to talk about the war and how we were going to get out of the war. And Nixon would say, oh, where do you go to school? Oh, that's a good football team.
Yeah.
And would talk to them about football. And the kids are rolling their eyes like, who is this guy?
Oh, yeah. And time again, he would show up or a representative of his administration would show up to a school and they would talk about their football team. They didn't talk, you know, and so what happens is you start to see, quote, patriotism being aligned with football. Nixon saying the kids that are playing football, the real Americans, the kids out, the 250,000 out in the streets aren't, or the 1.5 million out in the streets aren't, and constantly beginning to use this football imagery. Then, who light goes off in the head of Pete Rozelle, and he says, if we can tie 1976 bicentennial, if we can tie all these things together with football, we can have a real winner. And that's when, at the point you start to see. And George Allen was an incredibly conservative, real hawk kind of guy, a true buddy of Nixon's. I mean, he didn't seem to have any other friends in the world, but maybe Dick Nixon. That doesn't say much for you. And you see this evolution of making football the American game, of saying that baseball, remember, professional football at this time is still predominantly white. It is starting to change, but it's still predominantly white. Baseball's already gone through a period of time where it's becoming more and more non-white, and people are sort of saying, see, baseball is becoming sort of tainted, but football is this noble ideal. And Nixon, and so then every candidate for president, McGovern, Nixon, McCarthy, all started getting their best football players to back them up. And there was this race to get to see which football players you could get. And you know, campaigns announced, we have 223 members of the NFL on our side. Well, we have 326 on our side. And you sit there and go, there aren't that many players in the NFL. Just trading back and forth. But what Barrett does a really good job at, and I really am looking forward to talking to him about this next week, is that, you know, when Frank Gifford first started playing for the Giants, there were 8 newspapers in New York City, and not one of them had a beat writer assigned to the Giants. Not one.
Wow.
And the number of NFL games for which no report was filed in their city, in a major newspaper, was high. It's because people just didn't care. I mean, you got to remember, they didn't sell out the first Super Bowl, and it was on 2 networks and not just one. But it isn't really until the AFL challenges the NFL that the NFL decides to really run full steam to patriotism. We're going to make them the outliers. We're going to be the patriotic league. Whether it was Rozell or whether it's Goodell, they have found that if they align themselves this way, they capture the college football fans, they capture the professional football fans, and they capture the well-to-do conservative people who can argue and or can support causes that the rest of the people can't, and therefore that football wants to be on the winning side. One of the really interesting aspects of this, though, is you take a guy who came out of football like Jack Kemp to have a successful career, and what, on the one hand, never minded being mentioned as Jack Kemp, the former professional football player. But who admitted, you know, I wasn't that great a professional football player. I mean, I was okay. I wasn't really good. And kept trying to say, don't confuse the two. Politics is about working together. And he had a pretty conservative agenda, Kemp, but he was not an idiot. He was a bright guy. And he would say, you know, we need to work on these things the way we do in football. You know, that what you want to take from football is teamwork and backing each other up and having a competitive spirit. But they kept saying, no. Football is about winning. Football is about winning. You were a winner. You were a professional football player. We want you to bang this home in Buffalo. Take this. And then the football people wanting to be associated with the politicians who wanted to be associated with football.
I can't help thinking about the old George Carlin routine, baseball and football.
Yeah.
Football is it's a ground acquisition game. You know, it's a bit football.
Played on a gridiron. Right.
It's warfare. You know, you have the blitz and the bomb. It's
baseball,
it is the perfect modern game. And the other thing, let's not forget, too, that I still to this day believe baseball is best enjoyed on the radio as opposed to on TV. But football is the ultimate TV game.
Yeah, and what's the other interesting thing is that at the same time what they were able to do, you remember Dave Magacy's book?
Oh, yeah.
And Dave Magacy, for those who are too young to know, was a very talented, successful football player who quit early in his career. Was outraged by the way the system worked, where players were treated like chattel, like property. They had no real rights. And he became very outspoken, became a darling of the TV circuit. He was on Carson. He was on Cavity. He was on all the shows. He grew his hair real long, moved to a commune in California, and became a fairly radical spokesman for football, along with a number of other guys. And so what happened was Nixon and those kind of people immediately said, see, that's what's wrong with America. Those guys who quit, who don't stay with football, who have the chance to do this, but want to live this hippie lifestyle. And that's when you really start to see the jock, non-jock divide in America become a political divide right up through the Reagan Democrats, those elections in the early 80s, where if you love America, you drive a Chevy, you eat apple pie, you watch the NFL on Sunday, you drink Budweiser beer, and you vote for these candidates. And it's magnificent how Barrett shows how it all the pieces fall together.
A book is called Pigskin Nation, and we'll talk with the author next
week. Yes, next week. And subtitles, How the NFL Remade American Politics. Politics didn't make the NFL in a lot of ways. NFL made politics. That's a big statement, but he backs it up.
All right. That's coming up next week. Thank you, Bruce.